It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll talk to a state lawmaker who wants to change Wisconsin's educational standards, a move that would weaken the state's commitment to the Common Core.
But first, we cover a lot of Wisconsin culture and Wisconsin news here on Central Time, so it seems like the perfect spot to try to figure out which traits define the Wisconsin character. Is it our love of beer and cheese? Is it our stoic demeanor? Maybe the word bubbler.
We'd love to hear what you have to say about this one. Call us with your vote for the defining Wisconsinite characteristic at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page, how can you tell when someone's from Wisconsin?
Wisconsin native Michael Perry joins us now to help answer that question. He's the host of Tent Show Radio and the best-selling author of several books, including Visiting Tom. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you seem like the perfect spokesperson for this. You've got beer and cheese in your blood. Is there such a thing, Mike, as Wisconsin state character?
Well, I'd say two things. The first is whenever I'm asked to address this situation, I always like to lead with the fact that it depends on your perspective, of course, because there is, when you talk about being from Wisconsin, there's my perspective, which is kind of the classic old red barn, white farmhouse, green field full of black and white cows. And I can speak to that. But I always try to remember, too, that there is the, for instance, inner city Milwaukee experience or the Ojibwa experience or even the Sioux experience. And those, too, are all valuable Wisconsin perspectives. The other thing that I'm always careful about is that, as you said, I've got beer and cheese in my blood, except, and please, I hope no one hears this, I'm a writer from Wisconsin who's never had a beer.
Really?
So we maybe should have covered that before you had.
Well, you
me
know
on,
what? There's also lots of good varieties of milk, for instance, chocolate.
And how about this? I haven't had a glass of milk since I was 12. But I do love cheese.
I was going to say, tell me you've eaten cheese, Mike.
I'm a big cheese fan. You bet. Yeah. I grew up milking cows, and I think long about the age of 12, I developed some sort of distaste for it. I'm not against it or anything. I think that, of course, it depends on your perspective. But, yeah, in my case, I identify with the whole cheese head thing. I was on tour one time with a country music singer. I was writing about him, and I'd been on tour with him for about 10 days. And the last morning of the tour, the country music roadie stuffed my boots with cheese. And it was one of those loving pranks. I looked into my boots. I saw all the cheese, and then they looked at me and said, "'Cause you're a cheesehead," as if they needed to explain it to me. And I think sometimes we resist that stuff. I remember, I don't remember when the date was, but there was a little kerfuffle in the state over when we had to choose our state quarter. And I remember there were three options. There was a scenic Wisconsin option, which was, I think, Deer Lake and Fish, and then there was an early exploration quarter, which had a Native American greeting a trapper beside a canoe, and then there was the old classic agricultural quarter, a cow head beside a cheese wheel, and I think it was all garnished with a corn cob. And as I recall, the agriculture coin won the popular vote, and then the committee overruled and went with early exploration, and then at the last minute, the governor vetoed I don't know if he vetoed it officially, but they ended up going with the agriculture thing. And so we do sometimes resist those stereotypical images, but my response to that is when it comes to cheesehead, some people don't care for that term, but I say, man, you got to go with it, because just about the time we here in Wisconsin establish a new image for ourselves that we're more than just cheeseheads, what happens? The Packers go to the Super Bowl, and 800 million people tune in on a Sunday afternoon. What do they see but about 80,000 people sitting in the stands wearing Blaze Orange and cheeseheads?
Yep, a field of cheeseheads.
And you just got to start all over.
So you're saying to embrace that. But, you know, it could be that the stuff that we mentioned first, the beer, we didn't mention brats, but let's just list those right out front. Brats, cheese, maybe that's superficial. Are there deeper things that define Wisconsin character?
Well, one thing I've noticed, it's interesting when you go out to the East Coast into the publishing world, and I don't get out there often, but all these people from the Midwest spring up and in unexpected places in New York, working in Manhattan. And my first young adult novel is coming out this fall, and the editor that I got assigned to work with, I didn't know this until we were into the project, is from Wisconsin. And what I am told by some of the people who do the hiring out there is that it is a work ethic thing, and that we just are sort of raised with this idea that you don't make a real big fuss, you just get to work and get her done. And I think to an extent that's true. It becomes so hard to generalize anymore because, I guess it's the reverse of generalize. It's hard sometimes to identify specific things because, of course, we're all being ineluctably drawn to this digital center where we're all tweeting the same things and looking at the same photos. But yeah, I think there's a general blue collar approach to things in this state that, at least in my case, I really like. We're pretty big into keeping people with their boots on the ground. That's where I like to be.
What about, you know, what people think about Wisconsin from the outside? We kind of know what, you know, some of the things you just mentioned about the Wisconsin character from inside the state. You know, we know that we're more complex than cheese and brats, but what do you think people perceive of us from the outside when they look in?
I can only tell you what I know. Again, I always relate to the publishing world. So I know that twice I've had people from New York set up book tours where I had to fly. And this is once when I was living in New Auburn and once I was living in rural Fall Creek, which are, you know, quite a ways up north here. And they always book my flights out of the Milwaukee airport. And I have to explain to them that there's an airport over there in Minneapolis. It's an hour and a half from here. They got airplanes there that fly all over the world. And both times there was this little pause. And then the publicist on the other end said, "But you live in Wisconsin." And I, as the punchline I always use is I say, yeah, and we have an open border agreement with Minnesota. I hit the Hudson Bridge.
Yeah.
I just keep rolling. I do stop long enough to take off my Packer flags because I don't want to rub it in. But yeah, there is this, I think outsiders maybe just don't know what to think of us. And when I go out book touring on the West Coast, as soon as I mention that I'm from Wisconsin. I know doing book tours in the San Francisco area, as soon as I mention that I'm from Wisconsin, within 30 seconds I'll hear the phrase frozen tundra. And so I have to explain to those folks that we do have summer here as well, although at this point I don't think any of us have any idea what that's like.
I can't remember summer. No. Can you describe it for me, Michael? Right. Because I have no recollections anymore.
It involves the color green, which I think we just haven't seen for so long. Yeah, and also I think there's no question that even in this day and age, your background is informed by where you're from. And one of the things I talk about is how so much of our core knowledge is temperature-based. And I make jokes about that, but I tell the people in San Francisco that at the end of the summer in this part of the country, we don't roll up our beach towel, or we don't fold up our beach towels and put them away in the closet. We roll them up and put them down along the bottom of the kitchen door to keep the cold air out. And if you got one left over, you put it up there in the bedroom where the draft blows on your bald head. And it's hard to get a rolled-up towel to stick on a windowsill, but by the second night, it's froze to the window frost, and then you're good till April.
And that is double true this winter. We're talking right now with Michael Perry, Wisconsin native, of course, and the host of 10 Show Radio. He's the author of several best-selling books and his latest book, Visiting Tom, A Man, a Highway, and the Road to Roughneck Grace.
We're talking with Wisconsin writer and storyteller Michael Perry. We're trying to figure out what makes a Wisconsinite. Is there such a thing as a state character? Is it the food, the personality, the familiarity with cows? Call us with your vote at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Let's go right to the phones now. We've got Doug joining us from Lancaster. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
Hey, Doug, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hi there. Well, I was saying to the call-in person that I think what makes a Wisconsinite is our card games. My wife and I lived in Indiana for a couple of years during her residency, and trying to find somebody to learn how to play sheep's head was a challenge. Nobody had ever heard of it. And I taught a few people how to play, then we had a nice little group there. But everyone's like, what is this? What's the wild card? What's Trump? What's this? It took quite a while to explain. So I think that's definitely part of the culture of going up north and playing some cards and just having a good time during hunting season as well.
All right. Well, that's fantastic, Doug. I'm glad you talked about the card games, all the other stuff too. But sheep's head and euchre, these seem pretty darn Wisconsin specific. What do you think, Mike?
Well, unfortunately, there may be a button pushed down there. I didn't hear a single thing that Doug said. But
oh, he was talking about sheep's head and euchre.
Oh,
as,
sure.
As
yeah.
card games that in Indiana, people didn't know how to play them. And he had to teach them painful step by painful step. He got them going. But those seem like pretty good signifiers of what it means to be from Wisconsin.
They are. And that's also a great thing about how sometimes your culture can be transcendent, because I have some friends who had a very hard punk band, and the name of the band was Venison, one of my all-time favorite band names ever. But they did a song called Euchre, where they explain the rules of euchre. And that is solidly Wisconsin. So, I love the idea of that.
All right, Doug, thanks a bunch. And let's go to Linda in Middleton. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say I think it's the people. I've lived here about 20 years, and I think it's the friendliness of the people. My sister's car once wouldn't start, so we went to the local gas station. The guy came down. It was like 20 below. He got the car started. She tried to tip him. He refused to take her money. So I think that's just a good example of the Wisconsin people.
So friendliness, Michael Perry. Linda's talking about a specific sort of Wisconsin friendly. You know, you hear that term sometimes in regards to Minnesota, where people say Minnesota nice, and I don't think they mean it nicely. I don't know what they say about us in Minnesota, but is there a friendliness gene we have here in Wisconsin?
Well, yes, although I'd offer one qualification. I do think that friendliness she's talking about ties into what I was talking about with boots on the ground, where you say, well, yeah, I could come down there and help if that's what you need. You don't make a big fuss about it. The friendliness, however, sometimes isn't overt, and you almost need to learn the friendliness, because if we're a fairly stoic people, and again, I'm speaking broadly, but in general, if you walk into the local cafe, people aren't going to jump up and say howdy to you. That can be interpreted as being standoffish or unfriendly, but they'll just kind of quietly be around you. And I've told people, if you move to a small town in Wisconsin, you want to get to know folks, don't barge in and introduce yourself. Just go and hang out and wait. And eventually, one day, you'll need to get your car jumped and someone will help you. And maybe while you're putting the battery cables away, you'll have a little discussion. And 10 years later, you'll be part of the community.
So it's friendly, but it's not aggressive friendly. You got to put in your time.
Yeah, I think so. And of course, I like to talk about the stoic nature. I was talking to my brother the other day. He got hit in the throat with a piece of an exploding grinder.
Whoa.
And we were talking about the humor of pain. Mm-hmm. And nothing's funnier than your buddy getting hit in the head with a monkey wrench as long as he can still walk. And that's part of that stoicism. You don't make a big deal. You just go, oh, that was quite a deal. And then you walk on. Having said that, I always have to call myself into account, because I'm a professed stoic. I don't want to talk about my feelings, and you can't make me. And yet I've written, I think, 4 or 5 memoirs filled with page after page of me writing about my feelings. So I'm not sure how that really – I'm not sure if I'm qualified to speak to that.
So there's an ocean of feeling underneath the crusty Wisconsin exterior or something
course,
like that.
Of course. Sure.
Okay,
yep.
Let's go to Matt. Matt's joining us in Sparta. Hi, Matt.
I'd reach at stoicism. I'd also add in, kind of a individualism, I would say, personally characterized in Wisconsin. That and whitetail deer hunting. If you ask a hunter around the country where they'd like to go, a lot of them will tell you northwest of Wisconsin. I think we're pretty well known for that. That and cheese curds. I've never found any other place where you can get deep fried cheese curds besides Wisconsin.
Yeah, cheese curds and the hunting. Thank you. Thanks for mentioning all that stuff, Matt. And Mike, I know you're a hunter, right?
Yeah, I'm a fan of both of those things. So I am the cheese curd, I think, is in the Wisconsin pantheon. Deep fried, all the better. Although if you're going to have it raw, we all know, for instance, it has to squeak. And that's a little insider Wisconsin thing you can tell. If someone tells you their curds have to squeak, then you know that they're for real. And then the deer hunting, I grew up doing that. And that's still how we put meat in our freezer every year, or even my little family.
Now, he was getting at the outdoor culture in Wisconsin there, and I wonder if you feel like, a special connection to the Wisconsin landscape. I know that when I first got exposed to mountains, when I first saw them, they seemed like they actively wanted to hurt me. I never feel like that in Wisconsin. I always feel like everything is rolling and gentle. There are no precipices to fall off, at least not that many. Do you think there's something special just about the land in Wisconsin?
I do. I worked in Wyoming for 5 years, 5 summers, and I loved it out there. And I worked on a ranch, because kind of a cowboy, and I almost stayed. But the thing that brought me back to Wisconsin was out there, you just couldn't get away from the wind. And here, there's always there's a tree to hide behind, and you can take that metaphorically. Wisconsin does have that gentle feel to it, and it feels like the land is taking you in rather than dominating you.
All right, and we're going to have to leave it there. Mike, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this today.
My pleasure. I'm going to go have some cheese curds now to make up for all that beer I didn't drink.
That sounds pretty fantastic. All right, we're talking to Michael Perry. Mike is a Wisconsin native and the host of 10 Show Radio. He's also the best-selling author of several books, including Visiting Tom.
The state Senate will be considering a new education standards bill this week that could set the stage for a break from the Common Core in Wisconsin. The main senators behind the bill include Leah Vukmir from Wauwatosa and Paul Farrow from Pewaukee.
Under the bill, a new academic standards board would submit suggestions on subjects like reading, math, and science to the state superintendent and a legislative committee.
Some have criticized the proposal as politicizing education by giving a legislative committee the power to debate specific academic standards. Here with us to talk about the proposed legislation is State Senator Paul Farrow from Pewaukee. Senator Farrow, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks both for having me.
So in arguing for this bill, people have said Wisconsin shouldn't rely on national standards. We should chart our own path here in the state. What parts of the Common Core that exist don't suit us here in Wisconsin?
Well, Rob, what I think is happening, and you're seeing it across the country right now, typically, education has been a state-level issue. When it comes to development of standards, in Wisconsin, we've done it at a state level of a model academic standards. And then at the districts, they have the curriculum development to align to those standards. What we saw back in 2010, I think, was a shift in what was typically done in Wisconsin, was typically done in a number of different states. A set of standards was developed by an outside organization. And then we were asked to take on that entire set of standards. And the way it's designed, there's very little adjustment that we can do to it. One of the main reasons that as I looked at it and reviewed this process, it was designed to give us a set of standards that the federal government was saying we should look to as we're getting raised to the top funding. And when superintendent was the first state, when they were officially adopted in June of 2010, we were the first state to take it on. And I questioned, you know, from this point on then, as I came into the legislature, why are we taking away the possibility that a federal organizations or people will advise us on what the standards are? Shouldn't that be what we do at Wisconsin? And that's where we came up with this Model Academic Standards Board.
But the standards weren't developed by the federal government exactly. They were developed by governors, state superintendents around the country. It was a bunch of states coming together to try to say, hey, let's get on the same page. We can compare our results to each other. Is that really a federal imposition on us in Wisconsin?
Well, what I look at is a federal imposition. It was two independent entities that put the standards together. They're funded by the federal government, just like a number of entities are. They're also funded by the state organizations as well. What we're starting to see, though, is the standards as developed may not work perfectly for all 45 states. There are nuances of each state that are a little different that we have to be able to adjust to. So when you look at the standards, and as I look at it, it should have been set up as an advisory piece of standards that the states should review as they adopt their own. And that's what a number of states have done. Indiana's doing a very similar thing. They have rewritten and have a new proposal set of standards. About 65%, from my understanding, 65 to 70% are the Common Core standards. But that other 30% are standards that they realize we want a little more in math. Florida did the same thing. We're looking a little bit different on early age, what we want to do, what the timeline is that we want for educating them. And they took that on the onus that they should, saying this is the state's responsibility.
And we summed it up briefly at the outset, but how would, if this passed, if this became law, how would standards be suggested and adopted under your proposal?
What would happen is the standards board would be made up of 15 individuals. The committee would be co-chaired by a designee or the superintendent of schools himself, and then an appointee of the governor. Then we have a set of individuals that we recommend should be on the board. And the one thing I do want to say is there are no legislators who would be sitting on this board. We have that written into the legislation. These are individuals, principals from high schools, principals from middle schools, individuals that are in the education system. That board would then develop working groups, and each of the working groups would be charged with the mathematics area or the English learning language area or the science. You'd have, I believe it's 5 individuals who are a voting capability on those committees, and then we have 4 individuals who are curriculum-specific professionals. And those people can give us their insight, their knowledge. They may not be within the state, but they're bringing what other states have done so that we can look at that and come up with best practices. And then, as we said, we didn't want them to have voting issues or being able to vote on what we think is a state issue. So that's what we left it with the other 5.
But then ultimately it goes to a legislative committee, right? So eventually legislators got to vote on this.
Well, if there's a change. And the way I look at it is that the superintendent of schools is the co-chair of the committee. Through this whole process, he's watched this group work together. Once it gets done, they submit their recommendations to the superintendent and to the legislative council. The superintendent then has up to 60 days to evaluate and make recommended changes. If he changes significantly to what the board has recommended, then the Joint Committee on Rules can say, you know what we want, we don't agree with the changes that you made, so that we're now going to take the committee's recommendations and create a bill. That would be the only way they would come to the floor. If the superintendent agrees with what the committee has developed, doesn't make any changes, and presents those and says, this is our recommendations, we're in good shape, then the committee will accept that and we're done.
So one of the criticisms people have had here is we've got the Common Core. We've been working up to it. The school has been working toward it over the few years since it was passed. They've bought the materials. They've been preparing to do this. Now, without any specific problems with the curriculum that they have, you're saying put the brakes on. We want to start the process in effect all over again. It's costly. It's a big U-turn for the schools.
And we're not putting the brakes on. I think that's one of the misnomers that's out there. I mean, right now, as it stands, nowhere in this legislature does it say that we have to stop what we're doing. The Smarter Balance Assessment Test is still going to be instituted next year. There are concerns that a lot of people have with the testing vehicle itself. The Common Core standards were adopted. They're being implemented the last number of years. They'll be implemented next year. What we're saying is if this council determines that we should have standards that are different than the Common Core, they should do that within a year. And then once that's done, then those new standards should be implemented. Now, we've seen that in this time frame, it took them 4 years to implement the standards that they adopted. I would hope that we would do that sooner if we find that we have a better and more rigorous standards that we can come up with. But that's something that we can work through the process on. It doesn't say that at the end of a 12-month period, you have to throw everything out and start all over fresh. And I think that's something that the superintendent is throwing out there that is just not true.
One of the cases for states adopting Common Core is it lets us make apple-to-apple comparisons with other states as far as how our schools are doing. If we start changing things, if we start tweaking from the Common Core, does that make it harder to get to that kind of meaningful comparison?
I don't believe so. I think a number of states are doing the same thing that we are doing, and looking at the standards and realizing that there were some limitations that were in place, that since it wasn't reviewed, it wasn't implemented, it wasn't tested, they're finding that now as we're moving forward. And they're wanting to step back and say, look, we've got to make these adjustments. When you look at the standards across the board, if we had all 45 states doing the exact same thing, one, we become almost a group that has no uniqueness to it. And I think that's one of the things that we have to look at. We're not just educating kids for the sake of getting them through a process. We're trying to create a lifelong learning capabilities for them. And if I start adhering to these standards and can't say, you know what, we're realizing they don't work, we need to adjust, then we're not doing our due diligence to give those kids the proper pathway for that success. So I think it's going to be a situation where, as you see in the next couple of years, especially next year when the Smarter Balance Assessment comes online, I mean, this is a test that for the first time this spring, we will see the full test implemented and start to get a feel for how are the kids responding to the questions, how are they responding to the learning styles that are starting to occur. We still don't have any of that data. And I think that's one of the things that everybody looks at is right now you're making a lot of assumptions. I've made assumptions on information that's just not there.
All right, we'll leave it there. Senator Farrow, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's Senator Paul Farrow from Pewaukee. We've been talking to him about a new education standards bill. It gets a hearing in the Senate this week.